Coming up on today's Ride and Talk episode, community garages, vintage and electric motorcycles, and what the future may hold for two-wheeled mobility. Take a listen. Over the years, I've had the privilege of riding BMW motorcycles all over the world. And the one thing I've come away with is that the only thing more extraordinary than the ride are the people you meet along the way. These are their stories. My name is Sean Thomas, and this is BMW Motorrad's Ride and Talk.
Yeah, now we have a really loyal community who understands us, the crew, because this is not our main business. It has the potential.
Recently, we found ourselves in Germany and had a chance to spend several days in the city of Berlin. Now, like any big city, there are a lot of motorcycles. And where there are so many motorcycles, there is a need. A need to store bikes, a need to work on bikes, and of course, the desire to meet like-minded people. Enter Kraftwerk Berlin, a community garage and working space that allows people to store, service, and learn about their bikes, all with other riders and enthusiasts that share a passion for all things motorcycle. We sat down with Kraftwerk founders Michael, Kati, and Max and talked about the unique space that they have created, as well as their involvement in electric motorcycles and what the future holds for urban mobility, the combustion engine, and the bright and interesting future of two-wheeled vehicles. There was a moment here where you decided that something like this needed to exist. Can you tell us a little bit about what brought this to be in your minds and what the need was and how you came to create it?
It starts, I think, 5 years ago. We had a former location or workshop, very small, 200 square meters, and we met us there. And after a year, something like that, we had the idea to explode this everything. You know, we are just always hanging out there and had a lot of social contacts there, but not the space was too small for everything we have in our mind. And from there on, we start to think about to scale it a little bit more.
And this is an issue, I think, in any major city where the desire to be around motorcycles, to work on motorcycles, to store motorcycles is there, but the location is so difficult. There's just no place to park. There's no place to work. So how quickly were you able to take this idea and put it out there and get people to respond positively to the idea?
Yeah, of course, you build a place and then you have to bring the message out. So, okay, we're here. This is what you can do here. So that was basically Kate's job in the, right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So we have to, of course, create an image. And it depends basically on the people themselves. So we have our very first member. He walked into the place. We didn't have anything set up. And we just had a plan from Michael because, of course, he's an architect. He knows the drill about, you know, using a building just right. Yeah. And he says, yeah, I'm sold. So I'm going to join you. And then it all came together parallel. So we built up the place and we had our first members and then it just grew. And of course, you have like always some invisible like levels that you have to jump over. Mm-hmm. But right now, yeah, we're pretty happy about the community.
What is it that people are able to do here as a member?
Basically, almost everything you need to work on your motorcycle. So you can restore your bike, you can repair your bike, you can customize your bike. We try to add our knowledge or bring it over to the community. So there's during the week always someone here. All of us together, we bring together a lot of experience, especially Michael and Niels. Mm. And so we also wanted to keep the entry level low. So no one is looked at, you know, weirdly when you've never changed a spark plug. So that was really important to us that, the social aspect is right at the core and everyone feels comfortable.
You're describing me in that I'm somebody that doesn't really know a lot about the mechanical elements of a bike. So you say people can come here and have very little knowledge and they can get assistance from you and from each other. Is this how it works?
Okay, yeah, basically it's like that. But the community is so much more because people can really get to know each other and build the network. And get to know each other a little bit more. And then
sure.
We also try to get them together in groups like the off-road people or people who work on Harley Davidson or actually they are a group. The thing is, it's not just about the building job. It's about a lot more.
It seems like you have on this location, it's very clear that you can work on a motorcycle, but there is so much more to do here. Riding with each other, as you say, but also to relax and get away. You've got a whole area dedicated to having a place to eat and place to sit and place to socialize. How often is that taken advantage of here? How often do you have people just come just to be here and enjoy the ambience?
I mean, we are in an area where you don't have like a lot of tourists come by. So if we have guests, then they come here because they heard of Kraftwerk online or somewhere. So it was more like a mouth-to-mouth thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, you come here, you work on your motorcycle, but sometimes you're just exhausted and you want to grab a beer and, you know, give some advice. Sure. If it's needed or not, you will get the advice or some ideas. Yeah, so of course, and also we are showing MotoGP on the big screen. Mm-hmm. So we'd always try to bring the community together, but also the knowledge and the interactions in between the community. So that's actually really valuable because if you start off, you have an idea, you want to build a custom bike, for example, you have to start right from the scratch with all the network. And here we've collected over the years the right guys with powder coating and whatever. And also, of course, German TÜV is an issue. Sure. So we speak about the projects in advance and then there are no tears afterwards.
Tell us a little bit about the type of members that you have. I imagine they come from a pretty wide background of people, yeah?
It's completely different. We have here from the beginner of motorcycling, very young, to the oldest senior drivers here, 65 or something like that. So it's a section from the normal people here. Just normal people you don't see, but they are usually stay for it.
There's definitely a range of age. What about profession? What type of backgrounds do people that come here have, do you suppose?
Everything.
Yeah.
From the lawyer to the painter or hand workers.
Journalists, carpenters, surgeons, pilots, vets. So whole society is represented here.
Creative peoples. Everything. Mm.
Tattoo artists, of course. So if the zombie apocalypse will hit, we will have a nice army to survive here.
So. Perfect. Tell us about the building here. It is a beautiful building and it looks old, but very well built. Can you tell us what it was used for and how it was that you acquired it?
It was former a bakery here, a half of the building. The rest of the building was a
butchery
of butcher factory, still in use to 1991. And since then, it's nearly completely empty. Mm-hmm. It was sold from the authority from Berlin to one of the investors, and he tries to develop it, but nothing really happens here the last 30 years.
Actually, it's really hard to get a building like that. And we're so lucky to have found it. Mm. And the process was about 2 years of finding it. And the thing is that a lot of buildings are put down. And there's also in the inside area of Berlin, it's a matter of costs and stuff like that. And then, you know, all the gentrification process is really widespread in Berlin. And so Lichtenberg was a really happy and lucky find to get this one here. And it's like, you know, we went in here inside the building and I remember I was down here and the guys phoned me and said, Kate, come up to the first floor. You can't believe what we found there. And it's so amazing up there.
Wow.
It's all covered in graphics and it's old building structure and it's really unique, the place. Wow. And we're so lucky to have found it.
I don't think I've ever seen its equal anywhere. It really is.
Yeah, but Berlin really was looking like that in the 90s and the 2000s. And the process went so wild in Berlin, the refurbishing process. And so actually, third time I say it, but we're really, really lucky to have, to have a place like that.
Now, you've done clearly some work here. You weren't able to simply just roll into this building and stuff a bunch of motorcycles in. Tell us a little bit about what you had to do to get this place ready for what your vision was.
We opened this door back there, and the place was completely empty. So the former guy who was sitting here, he sold like weed
on a legal level.
Yeah, on a legal level, like, yes. You know, how to build like cannabis plants. The place was covered in graffiti and we had no proper doors. The windows were partially closed. So the first room, so workshop number one, and the cantina was actually the most ugliest one, and we didn't know what to do with it. And right now, in my personal opinion, it's like the most beautiful one. It has like a nice vibe. So, and initially we thought, okay, yeah, we have a lot of space. How are we ever going to fill 1,000 square meters? And yeah, let's put a little paint here and there and maybe set up some tools and yeah, maybe, you know, a wooden plank here and there. And then we should start off. And then,
Six months later, it
exploded a little bit. So, you know, we had some ideas here and let's put a glass wall there. And then, of course, we went to the construction market and bought stuff constantly. Hmm. Yeah. So with every detail, you know, the project evolves. And the problem is, in the first place, in the beginning, you have a lot of helping hands. So yeah, we had like 15 to 20 people who painted here and stuff. Sure. And then after 3 or 4 days, they recognize, oh shit, this,
it's too large.
There's still a lot of work left. And, yeah, after all, we've been like, let's say in the core team, yeah, like 4 to 5 people, yeah, who were building the place. And of course we had support from the community. So we had like the Berlin's fastest toilet man who set up the toilet in like 2 days. We had electrician help setting up the wall here. Mm. Also, the camera surveillance, for example, was done by Willy, who's working in cybersecurity for the military. Mm. So the camera cables, for example, they are from the Secret Service. So when they built the new headquarters in Berlin Mitte, like right at the center, they ordered 1,000 meters of cable, used 600, and we said, hey, we're going to take the other 400. So we saved some money there. But with the help of also out of the community, we were able to build the place, but it was a lot of work. So approximately like 8,000 working hours. So, and it takes a lot of passion to start that.
There's a saying in the USA, and maybe there's a similar one here. They say that if you want to make $1 million working in motorcycles, you must start with $2 million. and it's just to imply that it is a labor of passion to be in the world of motorcycles. We do not do this because we intend to get rich.
Is it only the world of motorcycles, or does it apply to a lot of other different?
It sounds like it applies to remodeling old buildings too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think I can speak for the whole team. So passion was the idea in the first place. And of course, there is a business model and we've started the company. But if you don't have passion right from the beginning and the right vibe within the team and the same idea, which direction you want to go together. I mean, we are completely different personalities, but we all had the same idea, yeah, to have a good coffee, watch through a glass wall, yeah, into a workshop, and ride the motorcycle right to your desk. So that's also what we accomplished here. So, you know, the little Tumblr world here and there in, sure, real life.
Now, in, as an example of that, you have day jobs. This is not what you do full time. Yeah. So after you've finished spending all the time and effort working to maintain this place, you go off and do your real job. Is that so?
Well, the thing was,
we have 2 full-time jobs now.
2 full-time jobs.
Wow.
Yeah. So in the beginning, we thought, oh, well, let's just put some paint on the walls and then put up the tools and then that's it. Everybody gets along and, we just ride with our motorbikes to the desks.
Yeah.
But anyway, so 6 months later and sore our backs and, broken, I don't know, toes. After that, we realized that we're actually a company now, and we're a team, and we're not just some guys who just have something in common. Mm. So now we're really working on it. But the thing is, it's really worth it because we see a lot of little plants starting to come up, and there's a lot of in it now, and we're really happy to have the thing to work at Kraftwerk. But since we have a seasonal job now, the Kraftwerk is a total summer business. Mm. And so we have our own jobs in the winter times and also in the summer too.
Yeah. And initially we estimated, okay, 10 hours a week for each crew member that should do it. And of course it exploded to like a full-time job potential. And we now try to juggle, you know, freelance jobs. And of course in the very first month, you also had, of course, to pump in money as well. So you were working here your ass off to build a place, then you're working on other places to make money, and then you had to push in money again. But right now we are super happy that we don't have to sit here in one suitor is covered in dust and you know, just living out of Red Bull and pizza.
Now, as we walked through, we saw people here in your mechanics bays workshops working on bikes. So these are members that are just here in their spare time to do work on bikes. Is this what's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have members here, but we also have 4-hour sets where new members or potential members can come in and try to get the vibe right. So sometimes they don't feel confident to, you know, approach a big community garage, but when they get to know us, so we're pretty open-minded, so they can rent you for 4 hours. So either on their own or with some help. Yeah. So there are two different models. And usually when they have experienced, you know, the friendly vibe, they say, okay, I was actually struggling a little bit and was thinking about it for half a year. So the introverts, you know, it takes a little longer to get them attracted. But when they meet us, they know, okay, we are just normal people, no, like the tough biker, whatever community, no club, no whatsoever. Yeah. So it's really in the core, a social project, and the motorcycle, the scooter, just glues it together. So
you look very tough to me.
Yeah, I am. I am. I mean, my legs are maybe the size of your arms. So.
So there is a very eclectic, very wide range of motorcycles here from your members. And I noticed that most of them are the type of bikes that don't have a lot of electronics. Yeah. Why do you suppose the bikes are older here generally?
I mean, it's way easier to work on them. And of course, if you want to customize a bike, you have way more opportunities to do that because of noise restrictions, you know, design, open air filters, cutting frames, whatsoever. So it's way easier. Of course, the bikes as base bikes are more affordable. So if you want to get into the hobby, you grab an old bike for €1,000 and you have another 4 or 5 to spend maybe, and then you can really build a cool individual ride.
Yeah.
So I think that's totally making sense.
Now, the bikes I've seen are in various states of repair. Some of them look like they're ready to ride, and others have the motors completely stripped out of them and are in the process. Do we really have people coming here and being that eccentric on how far they go into taking apart their bike?
Yeah, it's different from person to person. So you have members here who are completely enthusiastic. They roll their bike in and you don't see them for another 6 months, which is good for the business model, but not good for the community. And then you have others who are really passionate about it. Also sometimes ride. So like complete beginners, but maybe, you know, they work there. With no driving license. Wow. So they
work 2 bikes or 3 bikes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there are these examples, and then they dive completely in. So they buy the parts, and also they ask. So that's the value here. So if you ask a lot of questions, you're making less mistakes, and then you get quicker to your goal to finalize the bike.
Now, you had an event here that we had an opportunity to come and take a look at. It was amazing. And it was something that I've never seen before. It was an all electric motorcycle exposition. Can you tell us a little bit about what this was and how it came to be?
Yeah, that was the Reload Land, the very first European electric motorcycle festival. And that was an idea that popped up 2 years ago. And I thought, okay, I looked around. I've been to a couple of motorcycle events like Bike Shed and Wheels and Waves. And I thought, okay. And I was formerly working at Gestalten Publishing, working on the book The Current, which is also about two-wheeled electric mobility. And I thought, okay, I've never experienced these bikes live. So you always have them, you know, either as advertising or on Instagram. And the idea was to bring these different companies together, the EV community together for the first time, and create that the right vibe. And also we done it here because I love the tension between combustion engine motorcycles and also on the outdoor area, the electric bikes. Mm. And I think a lot of people were pretty surprised how many different concepts are out there. And personally, also, I thought initially, yeah, electric bikes, they all feel the same. You know, with combustion engines, you have like single and V2s and four cylinders, of course. And you know, it's a different character, a different noise, but it's the same actually with electric bikes. So you have different geometry, different weight, different power ratio, whatever. And we also displayed some custom bikes there. It was like the first event of its kind. The flag is now on the moon surface, and I'm really looking forward to see the event grow and get people to experience these bikes, but not like think of black and white, so they can exist next to each other. We also had a silent ride on Saturday with like 40 electric bikes through the city.
Wow.
And that was amazing and weird at the same time, because you know, you could hear the small talk even in the back roads on the lights, and so a lot of people also in the city center were pretty surprised to see us. So that I think we created some real special memories there, and I'm looking forward for the years ahead.
In a place like this, when you have this many motorcycles here, you can really absorb the beauty that is a motorcycle. And most of these bikes are internal combustion. And because they're internal combustion, we have things that absolutely must generally be the same. You know, the tires are always in the same place. The seat is where it is. The fuel tank is generally where it is. And of course, the motor. But now we're looking at electric bikes. And because of how they function, conventional design is no longer terribly important, and you can go in any direction you want. And we saw that at this electric show, where we had these bikes that had massively different designs. Now, as motorcycle purists, what do you think about where electric motorcycles are going in terms of design?
I think that's a very important thing, that you get much more freedom to design everything, mm-hmm. because you don't have these motor stuff and tank, as you say, and different powertrain stuff. So you have a lot of freedom for everything. And what you can see at the show was you have these old school type of electric motorcycles, because they have a special picture of an archetype of a motorcycle, as you have it for about over 100 years now. Mm. And on the other side, you have this completely future stuff, what could happen now, because you have these completely freedoms. You can put your accumulators where you want, and can put your motor where you want, on the front, on the end, in the middle, with gearbox or without gearbox, stuff like that.
And this is very interesting, because we expect with a concept motorcycle that they're going to go to the moon with design. It can be anything they want. But a lot of the bikes that were here were not concepts. These were production motorcycles, and they were so unusual, and almost with the exception that they had two wheels and handlebars and a seat, looked nothing like a motorcycle. How do you suppose those designs will be taken in by the community? Do you think that they have a strong future?
I think the design is one of the most important part of the process, because I was lucky to ride a lot of bikes on this weekend. And I also rode at the silent ride, which was really, really amazing. But I think the motorbike is always defined by the sound and how the engine moves. Mm. And for example, I ride a BMW, an R90, which is a new one, but also has this shaking moves at the motor when I turn it on, and has a certain sound. I recognize my bike. And so the design is very important thing about the electrical motorcycles, because there are only like three power steps in the engines, and you use it for mostly city urban drive purposes. And yeah, I think it's very open process by now. Actually, I would build in like a sound module to have different sound on it. What do you say?
From my point of view, I think it's a matter of age. So we had a small booth at the Green Tech Festival, and you could really draw a line below the age of 40. and above 40. So everyone below 40 was like really interested to come to the event. And above, they were like a little, you know, skeptic. And of course, it means change. It's like a big revolution. So we had like these Hell's Angels in the 60s and, you know, the rebels. And then you had like the next step with all the plastics and fairings in the 90s. And now you have different drivetrains. And I think it's also the same within the car industry. So you need to educate the people a little bit. So of course you have the proportions, you have physics and geometry. So I have always two wheels, suspension, whatever. But a region, for example, it's following more like the classic path, but of course you can go wild, and then it's a matter of the community if they will accept it and be brave enough to bring that design and these new concept into the world.
It's very interesting how we look at the practicality of an electric motorcycle. I mean, really, there's a lot of value in having this machine, and the technology is only getting better. But you're also, and as you mentioned, we are walking away from some of the emotive parts of motorcycle, the sound of the bike and the vibration and the intensity. How do you suppose the community will transition from the conventional motorcycle to what must be the future of two wheels?
I don't know if it is a must be. So yesterday I was sitting together with a guy and he said, I'm not pro EV, I'm pro fun. So I think that was a nice nice term how to say it, because I think it's still about freedom. Mm. It's still about fun on two wheels. It's different, but it's nice. And I think it still can exist next to each other. Of course, from the politics science side of things, and we have the climate crisis, there will get more pressure on the combustion engine, which means more taxes. Inner city circles will close down for combustion engines eventually in the future. So I think there will be a slow process towards the direction that you mentioned. Yeah, but I think with some companies are building in sound modules already. So Tar from Brooklyn, for example, they can create a complete new sound. And when these guys are riding through Manhattan, you know, pedestrians are like looking over and said, okay, what's this? I mean, and they also have like some vibrating sensors and what used to be the tank. So you can actually feel the bike, you hear the bike. And I think there is a lot more to come in the future when it comes to pleasure our senses, you know.
Now, you had this amazing exposition of all of these electric motorcycles, and it's such an interesting contrast to where we are right here, right now, where we're in a room and it's not just full of motorcycles. It's full of classic, iconic, beautiful motorcycles, which is a very nice embracing of both the new technology and vintage. Tell us a little bit about this collection. Michael, this is your collection. Yes, many of them. How is it that you came to get into the world of collecting motorcycles?
I start as a student. When I get my driving license, I just, because I don't have that much money, I old Moto Guzzi classic motorbike, which I can afford. And after a few kilometers, I got a completely crashed down motor. So I used to be fix it by myself, and I have no experience. And I just ask friends and friends and friends and stuff like that. And from there on, I'm totally fixed for motorbikes, because it's much cheaper to drive with two wheels as fast as in cars. It's also a kind of a way of freedom. So you bring it together. So like that. Yeah. And from there on, I'm totally in this two-wheel stuff.
Now, I see motorcycles from many different manufacturers here, and many BMWs, which I'm sure are your favorites.
Definitely not. As you can see here behind me, the Moto Guzzi, Le Mans 2, it's 1982, so I think it's the bike from a friend of mine. I built this bike in 1996, and since then he owns the bike, and he don't drive it and bring it to me to Berlin. And the first years when I was much younger, I only drive Italian bikes, Italian sport bikes. It must be very uncomfortable. A lot of things to range on it, and the handlebar must be sit down quite close to the X of the front wheel, stuff like that. Yeah. So it must be very fast and light, stuff like that. And BMW, nobody wants to have something to do with people who drive BMW in the 90s. It's too serious. It's
always working.
always working and stuff like that. So, but 15 years ago, I bought my first BMW and was very surprised that it's so much good engineering stuff in it. You can wrench very easy on it, stuff like that. So I start to collect BMWs. And as you can see, the last year since the heritage waves coming over the world, it was a kind of a second life of motorcycling because I'm growing in the 90s, beginning of the 90s with motorbikes or end of the 80s. And 2005, I think, or something like that, it was always the same.
Yeah.
So, and since then, there is a second life coming and it's getting more to the center of the common society. So, since before there, motorcyclists are a separate kind of society, I would say.
Now, among your BMWs, you have a particular set of models that really caught my eye, and it's the GSs. And it looks like you have an R80 GS and a GS Period car. Just because I'm such a fan of the GS in general, can you tell us a little bit about that collection that you have here?
Sure. The first one, GS, was I found in Munich in a storage. I don't know anything about this bike. I just bought it from a collection with other bikes and just put it because it was cheap.
Yeah.
And after that, I tried to get more information about the model and I was a lucky one. And it was one of the 200 signed from Gaston Rayet on the, wow, the tank in nearly mint condition. And nowadays it's nearly impossible to get a bike like this because there are only 200 existing.
Yeah.
And from there on, I'm very interested in this kind of bikes and I start to collect large enduros from the 80s and 90s.
And your collection here, I don't see anything that is newer than the 90s.
The newest one you see is the two basics, the R80 GS basics here in front.
Yeah.
The white ones, it's 1996.
Ah, okay. How can people find out about who you are and what you do?
Just go on our homepage, Kraftwerk.Berlin.
Okay.
Just very easy.
And are you still accepting new members?
Yeah, we do, but we are honestly on the edge of what's the space capable of. But there is always like a frequency of, you know, two people go, three come, you know, one is taking off for a world trip. So you always have these or some move cities. So we still can bring in new members, but don't wait too long. We had this festival and we have, I don't know, five more interests.
Sure.
But we are lucky about that because, I mean, I'm happy to bring in three of my bikes to welcome, you know, three new members. So I'm fine with that. So we make sure that everyone, you know, will find a space. But I think 10 more people and we're like exploding and we have to start a waiting list.
Now, your first location, you've learned very quickly, we're at the ceiling and we need a bigger place. This place is huge and you're at the ceiling once again. What does the future look like for this? Will it get bigger?
We have a lot of ideas just around everything what's going on in the mobile world. So we are quite close to the car scene as well. So we are quite interested to
vintage cars.
In vintage cars and probably in the future, if we have to move here on the site to when they start construction work here, probably we are thinking about to put something similar, what we're doing with motorcycles for cars, just very small. Yeah. But probably to bring it together.
Yeah.
So, and the event business should be a little bit more expand. The event business looks very good at the moment.
Yeah.
So the last 3 years, because we have this Corona stuff as well, so we don't have an complete normal season. As you can imagine that there are a lot of potentials which we don't get the last 2 years.
Do you think that you could come to the USA and create that for us there? Because we really need this.
But you have it already.
we do have it a little bit.
Yeah, there are a lot of places like that one.
Sean, we'll make you a good price for the franchise. So we give you all the business intels. We can tell you what not to do. Of course, it would. That was also our idea. I mean, when we started off, we got a lot of emails from all over Germany. Oh, man, why is it Berlin? Why not Frankfurt or Munich or whatever? But of course, it's always a matter of the right people who put in the passion. And then
if you have a place in L.A., we will come.
Yeah, so of course, for us, it's a seasonal thing. And
we get there for winter now.
Yeah,
so we close the Kraftwerk Berlin and come over in October.
Perfect, I love it. I want to take a moment to thank you all for coming and speaking with us today and speaking with our audience at Ride a Talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having
us. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Rock on.
We very much hope you have enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear from you, so please comment and share your thoughts about this podcast. We have many more on the way, so please subscribe, follow along, and share your requests for future episodes of the BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk podcast.